This is Nachyomi, Sefer Shemuel Bet, Chapter 2. David inquires of Hashem and is told to settle in Hebron. There he is officially appointed king over his own tribe of Yehuda. He's informed of the act of kindness that the men of Yavesh Gilad performed in retrieving Shaul's body from the Pelishtim and giving him funeral rites and a proper burial. David sends a message to Yavesh Gilad acknowledging and praising their conduct, but also making them aware of the fact that he's been chosen as king of Yehuda, and subtly suggesting that they lend their support to his new regime. In the meantime, the general of Shaul's army, Avner ben Ner, brings Shaul's surviving son Ish-Boshet to Machanaim and declares him the king of Israel. This marginalizes David and prevents him from establishing a unified monarchy right away. One day, the armies of Ish-Boshet and David find themselves encamped on opposite sides of a pool at Gibeon. Avner ben Ner suggests that the men fight one another for sport, and Yoav ben Tzruya, David's general, agrees. Each side appoints 12 men who face off on the battlefield, quickly killing one another. This provokes an all-out war between the two armies that continues for the rest of the day. At one point, Asael, brother of Yoav, is in pursuit of Avner ben Ner. Avner repeatedly asks Asael to turn aside so that he's not forced to take drastic action to save his own life. Despite their differences, Avner apparently values his relationship with Yoav and can't imagine harming Yoav's brother, let alone killing him. Asael refuses to heed the warnings of Avner, so Avner has no choice but to kill Asael by driving the back of his spear through the ribs of Asael. Eventually, the armies disengage, and Avner calls for the battle to be concluded. Yoav blames Avner for having started it all, but nonetheless agrees to the ceasefire. Yoav and his men have inflicted serious casualties on the forces of Avner, killing 360 soldiers while themselves losing only 20. This reflected the trend of decline of the house of Shaul as David and his kingdom continued to gain in strength. This chapter highlights the difficulties that stand in the way of David's campaign to unify the kingdom of Israel under his leadership. David once again displays his substantial political acumen here in reaching out to the men of Yavesh Gilad. We can imagine, and David surely imagined, that the inhabitants of Yavesh Gilad were wary of David and probably assumed that their heroic act of, on behalf of Shaul, of giving him a proper burial, would be perceived negatively by David. They supposed that David saw Shaul as an absolute nemesis and therefore would consider any act done on his behalf or in support of him to be an act of aggression or rejection of David. David's message to them emphasizes that he shares their reverence for Shaul and does not perceive them as the opposition just because they had a deep affection for his predecessor. On the contrary, he considers them worthy of great reward and would be honored to have them a part of his team. Neglecting the people of Yavesh Gilad would have been politically perilous for David, since their abiding sympathy for the house of Shaul might have translated into aggression against the new monarch. On the other hand, recruiting the core fan base of your former adversary is a monumental political achievement that David attempted to make here. He tries to do so by emphasizing his own admiration for Shaul and his wish to perpetuate the positive elements of Shaul's legacy. The wisdom of David's strategic approach here can't be overstated. There's a lot to be learned from him in terms of bridging gaps between people and easing tensions between people who are divided from one another on ideological, religious, or political grounds. We see that David is able to find a way to present himself as a friend and an ally, not a foe, even of those who might be his natural opposition. Avner is the key figure who thwarts this otherwise ingenious effort of David. Although Ish-Boshet was not previously considered a potential successor of Shaul, he wasn't even present on the battlefield during the war against the Pelishtim, which suggests that he wasn't considered especially qualified. He's propped up as a figurehead around which the supporters of Shaul can be rallied. The language of the chapter suggests that Avner somewhat artificially places Ish-Boshet in this role, despite the fact that he wasn't cut out to be king. The symbolic gesture of having Shaul's son occupy his throne and extend his reign was enough to hold on to the loyalty of the diehard fans of Shaul, at least for now. Keeping the regime intact, even on a precarious foundation, was similarly enough to keep Avner in a position of power and influence. Had David succeeded in uniting the nation, Avner had every reason to believe that he would be out of a job. The choices of capital for the respective kingdoms are also noteworthy. David chooses Hebron, a place that's well known to us as the burial place of the Avot. It's also the location that Caleb visited when he came with the 12 spies, the 11 other spies, as originally recorded in the Torah in the times of Moshe. And he inherited, Caleb inherited that area when the Jews entered Canaan. This conveys the idea that the Davidic monarchy is rooted in and embodies the legacy of Jewish history from the period of the patriarchs through the conquest of the land. David's kingdom is the fulfillment, the culmination of this multi-generational process of establishing the nation of Israel in the Holy Land. That's what the choice of Hebron as a capital would seem to suggest. Ish-Boshet chooses Machanaim. Machanaim was the place in Israel where Yaakov returned after his lengthy sojourn with his uncle Laban. He encountered a group of angels there, which reminded him that even while he was in exile, and while he was struggling, he was being guided by divine providence and was destined to eventually make his way back home. In the same way, Ish-Boshet may have wanted to emphasize that despite recent setbacks, losses on the battlefield, downturn in Israel, he was going to strengthen the Jewish presence in the land and restore the people to their previous state of blessing and prosperity. Yoav's appearance at Gibeon that sparked the conflict between the forces of Ish-Boshet and David was likely an intentional provocation, since Gibeon was a city located within the territory of Binyamin, and it was the home base of Shaul's court. It was also the center of national religious life at this time. The tabernacle, the Mishkan, had been moved there after the destruction of the city of Nov. So by bringing troops there, Yoav seemed to indicate his desire to establish a military presence in Gibeon and to say that it was now under the jurisdiction of the new king, David, and not Ish-Boshet. The selection of 12 men from each side to begin the military engagement was symbolic. The question was which monarch would be chosen to lead the 12 tribes of Israel, represented by the 12 men on each side. And that question is going to be settled by the sword. Avner and Yoav both treat the skirmish between their troops more lightly than it should have been treated. Both are brilliant and highly skilled military men. After all, Avner can drive the handle of a spear, the back of a spear, through a man's ribs and out his back. But they're extremely complicated personalities, as we are going to see in upcoming chapters in more detail. Regrettably, their callous and flippant attitudes toward the horrors of battle led to the needless loss of many lives. And the rabbis criticize both of them for their complicity in this unnecessary tragedy. At the same time, the outcome of this clash further reinforces the impression that the dynasty of David is on the rise and that the house of Shaul is declining rapidly.